Well, I used to have a brother, Najah said. A little brother. He died when we were young.
Oh. Rin didn't know what to say to that. Sorry.
Najah pulled himself to a sitting position. When the Chime was screaming at me, it felt like it was my fault again. Rin swallowed hard. When I killed it, it felt like murder. Najah gave her a long look.
Who was it for you?
Rin didn't answer that. They limped back to the base together in silence, occasionally ducking around a dark corner to make sure they weren't being followed. They did so more out of habit than necessity. Rin guessed there wouldn't be any Federation soldiers in that part of the city for a while. When they reached the junction that split the psych headquarters and the 7th Division's base, Najah stopped and turned to face her. Her heart skipped a beat. He was so beautiful then, standing right in the space of the road where a beam of moonlight fell across his face, illuminating one side and casting long shadows on the other. He looked like glazed porcelain, preserved glass. He was a sculptor's approximation of a person, not human himself. He can't be real, she thought. A boy made of flesh and bone could not be so painfully lovely, so free of any blemish or flaw.
So, about earlier, he said.
Rin folded her arms tightly across her chest. Not a good time. Najah laughed humorlessly.
We're fighting a war. There's never going to be a good time.
Najah. He put his hand on her arm.
I just wanted to say I'm sorry.
You don't have to-
Yes, I do. I've been a real dick to you. And I had no right to talk about your commander like that. I'm sorry.
I forgive you, she said cautiously, and found that she meant it. Alton was waiting in his office when she returned to base. He opened the door even before she knocked.
It's gone.
It's gone, Rin confirmed. She swallowed. Her heart was still racing. Sir. He nodded curtly.
Good.
They regarded each other in silence for a moment. He was hidden in the shadow of the door. Rin couldn't see the expression on his face. She was glad of that. She couldn't face him right now. She couldn't look at him without seeing his face burning, breaking under her hands, dissolving into a pulpy mess of flesh and gore and sinew. All thoughts of Najah had been pushed out of her mind. How could that possibly matter right now? She had just killed Alton. What was that supposed to mean? What did it say that the Chime had thought she wouldn't be able to kill Alton, and that she had killed him anyway? If she could do this, what couldn't she do? Who couldn't she kill? Maybe that was the kind of anger it took to call the Phoenix easily and regularly the way Alton did. Not just rage, not just fear, but a deep, burning resentment, fanned by a particularly cruel kind of abuse. Maybe she'd learned something after all.
Anything else?
Alton asked. He took a step toward her. She flinched. He must have noticed it. And still he moved closer.
Something you want to tell me?
No, sir, she whispered. There's nothing. Chapter 18
The riverbanks are clear, Rin said. Small signs of activity on the northwestern corner, but nothing we haven't seen before. Probably just transporting more supplies to the far end of camp. I doubt they'll try today.
Good,
said Alton. He marked a point on his map, then set the brush down. He rubbed at his temples and paused like he'd forgotten what he was going to say. Rin fidgeted with her sleeve. They hadn't trained together in weeks. It was just as well.
There was no time for training now. Months into the siege, the Nikata position in Coeur d'Alene was dire. Even with the added reinforcements of the 7th Division, the port city was perilously close to falling under Federation occupation. 3 days before, the 5th Division had lost a major town in the suburbs of Coeur d'Alene that had served as a transportation center, exposing much of the eastern part of the city to the Federation. Beyond that, they'd also lost a good deal of their imported supplies, which forced the army onto even poorer rations than they'd been subsisting on. They were surviving on rice gruel and yams now, two things that Baji declared he would never touch again after this war was over. As it was, they were more likely to chew down handfuls of raw rice than receive fully cooked meals from the mess hall. June's frontline units were inching backward, and suffering heavy casualties while doing so. The Federation took stronghold after stronghold on the riverbank. The water of the creek had been red for days, forcing June to send out men to bring back barrels of water not contaminated by putrefied corpses. Apart from downtown Coeur d'Alene, the Nikata still occupied three crucial buildings on the wharf, two warehouses and a former Hesperian trading office, but their increasingly limited manpower was spread too thin to hold the buildings indefinitely. At least they had shattered fantasies of an early Federation victory. They knew from intercepted missives that Mugen had expected to take Coeur d'Alene within a week, but the siege had now stretched on for months. Rin realized in the abstract that the longer they fended Mugen off at Coeur d'Alene, the more time Golden Nice had to assemble defenses. They had already bought more time than they could have hoped for. But that didn't make Coeur d'Alene feel like any less of an utter defeat. "One more thing," she said. Alten nodded jerkily for her to continue. She spoke quickly. "The 5th wanted a meeting about the beach offensive. They want to move it up before they lose any more troops at the warehouse. The day after tomorrow at the latest." Alten raised an eyebrow.
"Why is the 5th conveying a request through you?"
The request had actually been conveyed through Naja, speaking on behalf of his father, the Dragon Warlord, whom Jun had approached because he didn't want to give Alten legitimacy by going to his headquarters. Rin found the interdivisional politics incredibly annoying, but could do nothing about it. "Because at least one of them likes me, sir." Alten blinked. Rin immediately regretted speaking. Before he could answer, a scream shattered the morning air. Alten reached the top of the sentry tower first, but Rin was right behind him, her heart pounding furiously. Had there been an attack? But she saw no Federation soldiers in the vicinity, no arrows flying overhead. Kata lay collapsed on the floor of the tower. She was alone. As they watched, she writhed against the stone floor, making low, tortured moans in the back of her throat. Her eyes had rolled back in her head. Her limbs seized uncontrollably. Rin had never seen anyone react to a wound like this. Had Kata been poisoned? But why would the Federation target a sentry and no one else? Rin and Alten instinctively crouched low, out of the line of potential fire. But there were no subsequent arrows, if there had even been a first. Except for Kata's twitching, they saw no disturbances at all. Alten dropped to his knees. He grasped Kata by her shoulders, dragging her to a sitting position.
"What's wrong? What's happened?"
"It hurts."
Alten shook her hard.
"Answer me."
Kata just moaned again. Rin was stunned by how roughly Alten treated her, despite her obvious agony. But, she realized belatedly, Kata had no visible injuries. There was no blood on the ground, or on her clothes. Alten smacked Kata's face lightly to get her attention.
"Is he back?"
Rin looked between them in confusion. Who was he talking about? Kata's brother? Kata's face twisted in agony, but she managed to nod. Alten cursed under his breath.
"Is he hurt? Where is he?"
Chest heaving, Kata clenched the front of Alten's tunic. Her eyes were squeezed shut, as if she was concentrating on something.
"The East Gate,"
she managed.
"He's here."
By the time Rin had helped Kata down the stairs, Alten had disappeared from sight. She looked up and saw archers of the 5th Division standing frozen at the top of the wall, arrows fitted to their bows. Rin could hear clashing steel on the other side, but none of the soldiers were shooting. Alten had to be on the other side. Were they afraid they might hit him? Or were they just unwilling to help? She helped Kata to a sitting position by the nearest wall and made a mad dash up to the wall overlooking the east gate. On the other side of the gate, an entire squadron of Federation soldiers clustered around Alten. He fought astride a horse, slashing his way through in a frenzied effort to get back to the gate. His arms moved faster than Rin's eyes could follow. His trident flashed once, twice in the noon sun, glistening with blood. Each time he wrenched it back out, a Federation soldier collapsed. The crowd of soldiers thinned as soldier after soldier dropped. And finally Rin saw the reason why Alten had not summoned his flames. A young man was seated in front of him on the horse, sagging back against his arms. His face and chest were covered with blood. His skin had turned the same pallid white as his hair. For a moment Rin thought, hoped, that he was Jiang. But this man was shorter, visibly younger, and much thinner. Alten was taking on the Federation soldiers as best he could, but they had backed him up against the gate. Down below, Rin saw the psych had gathered on the other side.
"Open the doors!" Baji shouted. "Let them back through!"
The soldiers exchanged reluctant looks and did nothing.
"What are you waiting for?"
Kata shrieked.
"June's orders,"
one of them stammered.
"We're not to open it at any cost."
Rin looked back over the wall and saw another squadron of Federation reinforcements rapidly approaching. She leaned over the wall and waved her hands to get Baji's attention.
"There are more coming!"
"Fuck it!"
Baji kicked one of the soldiers out of his way, jammed the butt of his rake into the stomach of another, and began cranking the gate open himself, while Suni fended off the guards behind him. The heavy doors inched ponderously open. Standing directly behind the opening crack, Kata whipped arrow after arrow out of her quiver, firing them rapidly one after the next into the crowd of Federation soldiers. Under a hail of arrow fire, the Muganese fell back long enough for Alten to squeeze through the blockade. Baji cranked the gates the other way until they slammed shut. Alten yanked on the reins, forcing his horse to a sudden stop. Kata ran up to him, shouting in a language Rin didn't understand. Her tirade was interspersed with a variety of colorful Nikata invectives. Alten held up a hand to silence her. He dismounted in one fluid movement, and then helped the young man down. The man staggered as his legs touched the ground. He slumped against the horse for support. Alten offered him a shoulder, but the man shook him off.
"Is he there?"
Alten demanded.
"Did you see him?"
Chest heaving, the man nodded.
"Do you have schematics?"
Alten asked. The man nodded again. What were they talking about? Rin shot Unegan a questioning glance, but Unegan was equally nonplussed.
"Okay,"
Alten said.
"Okay. So, you're an idiot."
Then he and Kata both began yelling at him.
"Are you stupid?"
"Could have been killed."
"Sheer recklessness!"
"Don't care how powerful you think you are. How dare you?"
"Look," said the man, whose cheeks had gone as white as snow. He had begun to tremble.
"I'm happy to discuss this, really, but I'm currently leaking life out 3 different wounds, and I think I may pass out. Would you give me a moment?"
Alten, Kata, and the newcomer did not come out of Alten's office for the rest of that afternoon. Rin was sent to fetch Enki for medical attention, but was then told by Alten in no uncertain terms to get lost. She milled around the city, bored and unsettled and without orders. She wanted to ask one of the other operatives for some explanation of what had just happened, but Unegan and Baji were gone on a reconnaissance assignment and did not return until dinner. "Who was that?" Rin asked as soon as they appeared in the mess hall.
"The man of dramatic entrance,"
He's Alton's lieutenant, said Unagin. He sat down on the bench across from her. He adopted a contemptuous, proud affectation.
The one and only Chagan Suren of the Hinterlands.
Took him long enough,
Baji grumbled.
Where's he been? On vacation?
That was Kata's brother? Is that why...
Rin didn't know how to ask politely about Kata's seizure, but Baji read the puzzled look on her face.
They're anchor twins. Some kind of spiritual link,
said Baji.
Kata explained it to us once, but I forget the details. Long story short, they're bound together. Cut Chagan and Kata bleeds. Kill Kata and Chagan dies. Something like that.
This concept was not wholly new to Rin. She recalled that Jung had discussed this kind of dependency before. She had read that shamans of the Hinterlands would sometimes anchor themselves to each other to enhance their abilities. But after seeing Kata on the floor like that, Rin didn't think it was an advantage, but rather an awful vulnerability. Where's he been?
All over the place.
Baji shrugged.
Alton sent him out of Coeur d'Alene months ago, right around the time we got word they'd invaded Sinigar.
But why? What was he doing?
He didn't tell us. Why don't you ask him yourself?
Baji nodded, his eyes fixed over her shoulder. She turned around and jumped. Chagan stood directly behind her. She hadn't even heard him approach. For someone who had been bleeding out that morning, Chagan looked remarkably well. His left arm was carefully bandaged up to his torso, but otherwise he seemed unhurt. Rin wondered exactly what Enki had done to heal him so quickly. Up close, Chagan's resemblance to Kata was obvious. He was taller than his sister, but they possessed the same slight, bird-like frame. His cheeks were high and hollow, his eyes embedded within deep sockets that cast a shadow over his pale gaze.
May I join you?
He asked. The way he spoke made it sound like an order, not a question. Unagin immediately shifted to make space. Chagan circled the table and sat directly opposite Rin. He placed his elbows delicately on the surface, steepled his fingers together, and rested his chin on his fingertips.
So you're the new Spearly, he said.
He reminded Rin very much of Jiang. It wasn't simply his white hair or his slender frame, but the way he looked at her, as if he saw straight through her, not looking at her at all but a place behind her. When he looked at her, Rin felt the unsettling sensation of being searched, as if he could see straight through her clothing. She had never seen eyes like his. They were abnormally huge, dominating his otherwise narrow face. He had no pupils or irises. She forced a facade of calm and picked up her spoon.
That's me.
The corner of his mouth twitched upward.
Alton said you were having performance issues.
Baji choked and coughed into his food. Rin felt the heat rising in her cheeks.
Excuse me?
Was that what Alton and Chagan had spent the afternoon discussing? The idea of Alton talking about her shortcomings to this newcomer was deeply humiliating.
Have you managed to call the Phoenix once since Sinigard?
Chagan inquired.
I bet I could call it on you right now, you twit.
Her fingers tightened around her spoon. I've been working on it.
Alton seems to think you're stuck in a rut.
Unagin looked like he dearly wished he were sitting anywhere else. Rin gritted her teeth.
Well, he thought wrong.
Chagan shot her a patronizing smile.
I can help, you know. I'm his seer. This is what I'm good at. I traverse the world of spirit. I speak to the gods. I don't summon deities, but I know my way around the pantheon better than anyone else. And if you're having issues, I can help you find your way back to your god.
I'm not having issues, she snapped. I was scared at the marsh. I am not now.
And that was the truth. She suspected she could call the Phoenix now, right in this mess hall, if Alton asked her to. if Alton would deign to talk to her beyond giving her orders. If Alton trusted her enough to give her an assignment above patrolling stretches of the city where nothing ever happened.
Chagan raised an eyebrow.
Alton isn't so sure.
Well, maybe Alton should get his head out of his ass, she snapped,
then immediately regretted speaking. Disappointing Alton was one thing. Complaining about it to his lieutenant was another.
No one at the table was bothering to pretend to eat anymore. Baji and Unegan both fidgeted like they couldn't wait to leave, looking around at everything except Rin and Chagan. But Chagan only looked amused.
Oh, you think he's an asshole?
Anger flared inside her. Her last remaining shreds of caution fled.
He's impatient, over-demanding, paranoid, and—
Look, everyone's on edge,
Baji interrupted hastily.
We shouldn't complain. Chagan, there's no need to tell— I mean, look.
Chagan tapped his fingers against the table.
Baji, Unegan, I want a word with Rin.
He spoke so imperiously, so arrogantly, that Rin thought that surely Baji would tell Chagan where he could shove it. But he and Unegan simply picked up their bowls and left the table. Amazed, she watched them walk to the other end of the room without so much as a word. Not even Alton commanded that kind of unquestioning subordination. When the others were out of earshot, Chagan leaned forward.
If you ever speak about Alton like that again, he said pleasantly, I will have you killed.
Chagan might have cowed Baji and Unegan, but Rin was too angry to be afraid of him.
Go ahead and try, she snapped. It's not like we have soldiers to spare.
Chagan's mouth quirked into a grin.
Alton did say you were difficult.
She gave him a wary look.
Alton's not wrong.
So you don't respect him?
I respect him, she said. I just— he's been—
different. Paranoid. Not the commander I thought I knew.
What she didn't want to admit was that Alton was scaring her. But Chagan looked surprisingly sympathetic.
You must understand. Alton is new to command. He's trying to figure out what he's doing just as much as you are. He's scared.
He was scared? Rin almost laughed. Alton's attempted operations had grown so much in scale over the past 2 weeks that it felt as if he were trying to take on the entire Federation by himself. Alton doesn't know what scared means.
Alton is perhaps the most powerful martial artist in Nikon right now. Maybe the world, said Chagan. But for all that, most of his life he was just good at following orders. Tyr's death was a shock to us. Alton wasn't ready to take over. Command is difficult for him. He doesn't know how to make peace with the warlords. He's overextended. He's trying to fight an entire war with a squad of 10. And he's going to lose.
You don't think we can hold Curdaline?
I think we were never meant to hold Curdaline, said Chagan. I think Curdaline was a sacrifice for time paid in blood. Alton is going to lose because Curdaline is not winnable. And when he does, it's going to break him.
Alton won't break, she said. Alton was the strongest fighter she'd ever seen. Alton couldn't break.
Alton is more fragile than you think, said Chagan. He's cracking under the weight of command, can't you see? This is new territory for him. And he's flailing. Because he's utterly dependent on victory.
Rin rolled her eyes.
The entire country's dependent on our victory.
Chagan shook his head.
That's not what I mean. Alton is used to winning. His entire life he's been put on a pedestal. He was the last Spearly, a national rarity. Best student at the academy. Tyr's favorite in the psych. He's been fed a steady stream of constant affirmation for being very good at destroying things, but he won't get any praise here. Especially not when his own soldiers are openly insubordinate.
I'm not being—
Oh, come now, Rin. You're being a little bitch, is what you're doing. All because Alton won't pet you on the head and say you're doing a great job.
She stood up and slammed her hands on the table. Look, asshole, I don't need you to tell me what to do.
And yet, as your lieutenant, that is precisely my job.
Chagon glanced lazily up at her, and his expression was so smug that Rin trembled from the effort of not smashing his face into the table.
Your duty is to obey. My duty is to see that you stop fucking up. So I would suggest you get your shit together. Learn to call the damn fire, and give Alton one less thing to worry about. Am I clear?
Chapter 19.
So who's the newcomer?
Nedja asked casually. Rin wasn't sure if she could discuss Chagon without kicking something, which would be bad, especially since they were supposed to be hiding. But they had been staking out the barricade for what seemed like hours, and she was getting bored. He's Alton's lieutenant.
How come I've never seen him before?
He's been away, she said. A hail of arrows whizzed above them. Nedja ducked back below the barricade. The 7th Division had launched a joint assault with the Syke against the embassies by the wharf in an attempt to cut the main Federation encampment in two. In theory, if they could hold the old Hesperian quarters, they could then divide the enemy forces and cut off their access to the docks. They had sent two regiments, one attacking perpendicular to the river, and the other snaking around to the wharf from the direction of the canals. But they had to move past 5 heavily defended intersections to get to the wharf, and those had turned into 5 separate bloodbaths. The Federation hadn't met them out on the open field because they didn't need to. Safely ensconced behind the walls of the buildings they held on the wharf, they responded to the Nikara onslaught by embedding themselves on rooftops and shooting from windows on the upper floors of the embassy buildings. The 7th Division's only option was to throw their infantry en masse against the Federation's fortified position. They had to gamble that the press of Nikara bodies would be enough to force the Federation out. It had turned into a contest of flesh against steel, and the militia was determined to break the Federation upon their bodies.
You mean you have no clue?
Nedja said as a fire rocket exploded over his head. I mean you have no business asking. She didn't know if Nedja was fishing for information for his father, or if he was just trying to make small talk. She supposed it didn't matter. Chagon's presence was hardly a secret, especially after Alton's dramatic rescue outside the East Gate. Perhaps because of that, though, the militia seemed even more spooked by him than they were by the rest of the site combined. Several paces down, Suni lit one of Ramsa's specialty bombs and hurled it over the barricade. They ducked back down and plugged up their ears until a now familiar acrid, sulfuric smell filled their nostrils. The arrow fire stopped.
Is that shit?
Nedja demanded. Don't ask, Rin said. In the temporary lull granted by Ramsa's dung bomb, they moved past the barricade and stormed down the street to reach the next of the 5 intersections.
I heard he's creepy, Nedja continued. I heard he's from the Hinterlands.
Kata's from the Hinterlands, too. So what?
So I've heard he's unnatural, Nedja said.
Rin snorted. It's the Syke! We're all unnatural. A massive explosion rolled through the air in front of them, followed by a series of bursts of fire. Alton. He was leading the charge. His roiling flames, combined with Ramsa's many fire-powder spectacles, created a number of large fires that drastically improved their nighttime visibility. Alton had broken through to the next intersection. The Nikara continued their surge forward.
But he can do things that Spearleys can't, Nedja said as they pressed on. They say he can read the future. Shatter minds. My father says that even the warlords know of him. Did you know that? It makes you wonder. If Alton's got a lieutenant who's so powerful that he scares the warlords, why is he sending him away from Curdaline? What are they planning?
I'm not spying on my own division for you, Rin said.
I didn't ask you to,
Nedja said delicately.
I'm just saying you might want to keep an open mind.
And you might want to keep your nose out of my division's matters.
But Najah had stopped listening. He stared over Rin's shoulder at something farther along the wharf, where the first line of Nikata soldiers was pressing.
What is that?
Rin craned her neck to see what he was looking at. Then she squinted in confusion. An odd greenish-yellow fog had begun wending its way over the blockade toward the two division squadrons in front of them. As if in a dream, the fighting stopped. The foremost squadron ceased moving, lowering their weapons with an almost hypnotic fascination as the cloud reached the wall, paused, gathered itself like a wave, and then ponderously lapped over into the dugouts. Then the screaming began.
"Retreat!" shouted a squadron officer. "Retreat!"
The militia reversed direction immediately, commencing a disorganized stampede away from the gas. They abandoned their hard-won stations along the wharf in a frenzy to get away from the gas. Rin coughed and glanced over her shoulder as she ran. Most of the soldiers who hadn't escaped the gas lay gasping and twitching on the ground, clawing at their faces as if their own throats were attacking them. Others lay quite still. An arrowhead lashed across her cheek and embedded itself in the ground before her. The side of her mouth exploded in pain. She cupped a hand against it and continued running. The Federation soldiers were firing from behind the poisonous fog. They were going to pick them off one by one. The forest line loomed up before her. She would be fine once she could take cover behind the foliage. Rin ducked her head and sprinted for the trees. Only 100 yards. 50. 20. Behind her she heard a strangled cry. She twisted her head to look and tripped over a rock, just as another arrow whistled over her head. Blood streamed from her cheek into her eyes. Rin wiped it furiously off and rolled over flat against the ground. The source of the cry was Najah. He was crawling furiously forward, but the gas had caught up to him. He met her eyes through the fog. He might have lifted one hand toward her. She watched in horror, mouth open in a silent scream, as the gas enveloped him. Through the gas, she saw forms advancing. Federation soldiers. They wore bulky contraptions over their heads, masks that concealed their necks and faces. They seemed unaffected by the gas. One of them lifted a bulky gloved hand and pointed where Najah lay. Without thinking, Rin took a deep breath of air and rushed into the fog. It burned her skin as soon as she touched it. She clenched her teeth and forged ahead through the pain. But she'd hardly gone 10 paces when someone grabbed her by the shoulder and yanked her back out of the gas zone. She struggled furiously to escape their grip. Alton didn't let go.
"Back off!"
She elbowed him in the face. Alton stumbled and grabbed at his nose. Rin tried to duck past him, but Alton wrenched her backward by her wrist.
"What are you doing?"
he demanded.
"They've got Najah!"
she screamed.
"I don't care."
He pushed her in the direction of the tree line.
"Retreat!"
"You're leaving one of our men to die!"
"He's not one of our men. He's one of the Seventh's men. Go!"
"I won't leave my friend behind."
"You will do as I command."
"But Najah!"
"I'm not sorry about this," Alton said, and jammed a fist into her solar plexus.
Stunned, paralyzed, she sank to her knees. She heard Alton shout out an order, and then someone picked her up and slung her over their shoulders as if she were a child. She beat and screamed as the soldier began jogging in the direction of the barracks. From the soldier's back, she thought she could see the masked Federation soldiers dragging Najah away. The gas attack created precisely the effect that the Federation intended. The sugar bomb had been devastating. The gas attack was monstrous. Kurdeline erupted into a state of terror. Though the gas itself dissipated within an hour, rumors of it spread quickly. The fog was an invisible enemy, one that killed indiscriminately. There was no hiding from the fumes. Civilians began fleeing the city en masse, no longer confident in the militia's ability to protect them. Panic enveloped the streets. June's soldiers had shouted themselves hoarse in the alleys, trying to convince civilians they would be safer behind city walls. But the people weren't listening. They felt trapped. The narrow, winding roads of Kerdeline meant certain death in case of another gas attack. While the city collapsed into chaos, the commanders commenced an emergency meeting in the nearest headquarters. The psych crammed into the Ram Warlord's office along with the warlords and their junior officers. Rin leaned against the corner of the wall, listening dully as the commanders argued over their immediate strategy. Only one of June's soldiers on the beach had survived the attack. He had been posted in the back, and had dropped his weapon and run as soon as he saw his comrades choking.
"It was like breathing fire," he reported. "Like red-hot needles were piercing my lungs. I thought I was being strangled by some invisible demon. My throat closed up. I couldn't breathe."
He shuddered. Rin listened, and resented him for not being Najah. "It was only 50 yards. I could have saved him. I could have dragged us both out."
"We need to evacuate downtown right now," June said.
He was remarkably calm for a man who had just lost more than 100 men to a poisonous fog.
"My men will..."
"Your men will do crowd control. The civilians are going to trample themselves trying to get out of the city, and it'll be easy for Mugen to pick them off if they're not corralled out in an orderly fashion,"
Alton said. Amazingly, June didn't argue.
"We'll pack up headquarters and move it farther back into the Sihang warehouse,"
Alton continued.
"We can dump the prisoner in the basement."
Rin jerked her head up. "What prisoner?" She was faintly aware that she should not be talking, that as an unranked soldier of the psych, she was not technically a part of this meeting, and was certainly acting out of line. But she was too grief-stricken and exhausted to care. Unegan leaned down and murmured into her ear.
"One of the Federation soldiers got caught in their own gas. Alton took his mask and pulled him out."
Rin blinked in disbelief. "You went back in?" she asked. Her voice rang very loudly in her ears. "You had a mask?" Alton shot her an irritated look.
"This is not the time," he said.
She clambered to her feet.
"You let one of our people die?"
"You and I can discuss this later."
She understood in the abstract the strategic boon of taking a Federation prisoner. The last Federation soldiers who had been captured spying across the bank had promptly been torn apart by furious civilians. And yet...
"You are unbelievable," Rin said.
"We will see to headquarters evacuation," Alton said loudly over her. "We'll regroup in the warehouse."
June nodded curtly, then muttered something to his officers. They saluted him and left the headquarters at a run. At the same time, Alton issued orders to the psych.
"Kara, Unegan, Ramsa, secure us a safe route to the warehouse and guide June's officers there. Baji and Suni, help Enki pack up shop. The rest of you resume positions in case of another gas attack."
He paused at the door.
"Rin, you stay."
She hung back as the rest of them exited the office. Unegan cast her a nervous look on his way out. Alton waited until they were alone, and then he closed the door. He crossed the room and stood so that there was very little distance between them.
"You do not contradict me,"
he said quietly. Rin crossed her arms.
"Ever? Or just in front of June?"
Alton didn't rise to the bait.
"You will answer to me as a soldier to her commander."
"Or what? You'll have Suni drag me out of your office?"
"You're out of line."
Alton's voice dropped to a dangerously low volume. "And you let my friend die," Rin answered. "He was lying there, and you left him there."
"You couldn't have extracted him."
"Yes, I could have,"
she seethed.
"And even if I couldn't have, you might have. You might have saved my friend, instead of dragging out some Federation soldier who deserved to die in there."
"Prisoners of war have greater strategic importance than individual soldiers,"
Alton said calmly.
"That is such bullshit,"
she snarled. Alton didn't answer. He took 2 steps forward and struck her across the face. None of her guards were up. She took the full force of his hit with no preparation. His blow was so powerful that her head snapped to the side. The sudden impact made her knees buckle, jerked her to the ground. She raised a hand to her cheek, stunned. Her fingers came away bloody. He'd reopened her arrow wound. Slowly she looked up at Alton. Her ears rang. Alton's scarlet gaze met hers, and the naked rage on his face stunned her.
"How dare you!" he said.
His voice was overly loud, distorted through her thundering ears.
"You misunderstand the nature of our relationship. I am not your friend. I am not your brother, though kin we may be. I am your commander. You do not argue with my orders. You follow them without question. You obey me, or you leave this militia."
His voice held the same double timbre that Jung's voice had held when he opened the void at Synegard. Alton's eyes burned red. No, they were not red. They were the color of fire itself. Flames blazed behind him. Flames whiter and hotter than any fire she'd ever been able to summon. She was immune to her own fire, but not his. It burned in her face, choking her, forcing her backward. The ringing in her ears reached a crescendo. "He doesn't get to do this to you," said a voice in Rin's head. "He doesn't get to terrorize you." She had not come this far to crouch like this in fear. Not to Walton. Not to anyone. She stood up, even as she reached somewhere inside herself, somewhere spiteful and dark and horrible, and opened the channel to the entity she already knew was waiting for her summons. The room pitched forward as if viewed through a long scarlet prism. The familiar burn was back in her veins, the burn that demanded blood and ashes. Through the red haze, she thought she saw Alton's eyes widen in surprise. She squared her shoulders. Flames flared from her shoulders and back. Flames that mirrored Alton's. She took a step toward him. A loud crackling noise filled the room. She felt an immense pressure. She trembled under the weight of it. She heard a bird's laughter. She heard a god's amused sigh.
"You children," murmured the phoenix. "You absurd, ridiculous children. My children."
Alton looked stunned. But just as her flames resisted his, she began to feel uncomfortably hot again, felt his fire begin to burn her. Rin's fire was an incendiary flash, an impulsive flare of anger. Alton's fire drew as its source an unending hate. It was a deep, slow burn. She could almost taste it, the venomous intent, the ancient misery, and it horrified her. How could one person hate so much? What had happened to him? She could not maintain her fire anymore. Alton's flames burned hotter than hers. They had fought a contest of wills, and she had lost. She struggled for another moment, and then her flames shrank back into her as quickly as they'd sprung out. Alton's fire dimmed a moment after hers did. "This is it," Rin thought. "I've crossed the line. This is the end." But Alton didn't look furious. He didn't look like he was about to execute her. No, he looked pleased.
"So that's what it takes," he said.
She felt drained, as if the fire had burned up something inside her. She couldn't even feel anger. She could barely stand.
"Fuck you," she said.
"Fuck you." "Get to your post, soldier," said Alton. She left his office, slamming the door shut behind her.
"Fuck me." Chapter 20. There you are. She found Chagan over the north wall. He stood with his arms crossed, watching as civilians poured out of Kurdalein's dense streets like ants fleeing a collapsed hill. They straggled through the city gates with their worldly possessions packed onto wagons, strapped to the sides of oxen or horses, slung across their shoulders on poles meant for carrying water, or simply dragged along in sacks. They had chosen to take their chances in the open country, rather than to stay another day in the doomed city. The militia was remaining in Coeur d'Alene. It was still a strategic base that needed to be held, but they would be protecting nothing but empty buildings from here on out.
"Coeur d'Alene's done for," Chagan said, leaning against the wall. "Militia included. There'll be no supplies after this. No hospital. No food. Soldiers fight battles, but civilians keep armies alive. Lose the resource well, and you've lost the war."
"I need to talk to you," she said. He turned to face her, and she suppressed a shudder at the sight of those eyes without pupils. His gaze seemed to rest on the scarlet palm print on her cheek. His lips pressed together in a thin line, as if he knew exactly how the mark had gotten there.
"Lovers spat," he drawled.
"Difference of opinion."
"Shouldn't have harped on about that boy," he tutted. "Alton doesn't tolerate shit like that. He's not very patient."
"He's not human," she said, recalling the horrible anger behind Alton's power. She'd thought she understood Alton. She'd thought she had reached the man behind the command title. But she realized now that she didn't know him at all. The Alton she'd known, at least the Alton in her mind, would have done anything for his troops. He wouldn't have left someone in the gas to die.
I don't know what he is."
"But Alton was never allowed to be human," Chagan said, and his voice was uncharacteristically gentle. "Since childhood, he's been regarded as a militia asset. Your masters at the academy fed him opium for attacking his classmates and trained him like a dog for this war. Now he's been shouldered with the most difficult command position that exists in the militia. And you wonder why he's not going to trouble himself with your little boy toy."
Rin almost hit Chagan for that, but she restrained herself with a twitch and set her jaw. "I'm not here to talk about Alton."
"Then why, pray tell, are you here?"
"I need you to show me what you can do," she said.
"I do a lot of things, sweetheart." She bristled.
"I need you to take me to the gods." Chagan looked smug.
"I thought you didn't have a problem calling the gods."
"I can't do it as easily as Alton can."
"But you can do it."
Her fingers curled into fists by her sides. "I want to do what Alton can do." Chagan raised an eyebrow. She took a deep breath. Chagan didn't need to know what had happened in the office.
"I've been trying for months now. I think I've got it. I'm not sure. But there's something, someone that's blocking me."
Chagan assumed a mildly curious expression, tilting his head in a manner painfully reminiscent of Jiang.
"You're being haunted?"
"It's a woman."
"Really?"
"Come with me," she said. "I'll show you."
"Why now?" He crossed his arms over his chest. "What happened?"
She didn't answer his question.
"I need to do what he can do," she said flatly. "I need to call the same power that he can."
"And you didn't bother with me before because..."
"You weren't fucking here!"
"And when I returned?"
"I was obeying the warnings of my master."
Chagan sounded like he was gloating.
"Those warnings no longer apply."
She set her jaw. "I've realized that masters inevitably let you down." He nodded slowly, though his expression gave nothing away.
"And if I can't get rid of this ghost?"
"Then at least you'll understand." She held out her hands. "Please."
That supplication was enough. Chagan gave a slight nod, and then beckoned her to sit down beside him. While she watched, he unpacked his knapsack and spread it out on the stone floor. An impressive supply of psychedelics was packed inside, tucked neatly into more than 20 little pockets.
"This is not derived from the poppy plant," he said as he mixed powders into a glass vial. "This drug is something far more potent. A small overdose will cause blindness. More than that, and you will be dead in minutes. Do you trust me?"
"No, but that's irrelevant." Chuckling softly, Chagan gave the vial a shake. He dumped the mixture into his palm, licked his index finger, and dipped it lightly in the drug so that the tip of his finger was covered by a light smattering of fine blue dust.
"Open your mouth," he said.
She pushed down a swell of hesitation and obliged. Chagan pressed the tip of his finger against her tongue. She closed her eyes, felt the psychedelics seep into her saliva. The onset was immediate and crushing, like a dark wave of ocean water had suddenly slammed on top of her. Her nervous system broke down completely. She lost the ability to sit up and crumpled at Chagan's feet. She was at his mercy now, completely and utterly vulnerable before him. "He could kill me right now," she thought dully. She didn't know why it was the first thought that sprang to her mind. "He could get rid of me now, if he wanted to." But Chagan only knelt down beside her, grasped her face by her cheeks, and pressed his forehead against hers. His eyes were open very, very wide. She stared into them, fascinated. They were a pale expanse, a window into a snowy landscape, and she was traversing through them. And then they were hurtling upward. She hadn't known what she had expected. Not once in 2 years of training had Jiang guided her into the spirit realm. It had always been her mind alone, her soul alone in the void, journeying up toward the gods. With Chagan, she felt as if a piece of her had been ripped away, was clutched in the palm of his hand, being taken somewhere of his choosing. She was immaterial, without body or form, but Chagan was not. Chagan remained as solid and real as before, perhaps even more so. In the material world he was gaunt and emaciated, but in the realm of spirit he was solid and present. She understood now why Chagan and Kata had to be two halves of a whole. Kata was grounded, material, fully made of earth. To call them anchor twins was a misnomer. She alone was the anchor to her ethereal brother, who belonged more in the realm of spirit than he did in a world of flesh and blood. The route to the Pantheon was familiar by now, and so was the gate. Once again the woman materialized in front of her. But something was different this time. This time the woman was less like a ghost and more like a corpse. Half her face was torn away, revealing bone underneath, and her warrior's garb had burned away from her body. The woman stretched a hand out toward Rin in supplication.
"It'll eat you alive," she said. "The fire will consume you. To find our god is to find hell on earth, little warrior. You will burn and burn and never find peace."
"How curious," said Chagan. "Who are you?"
The woman whirled on him.
"You know who I am," she said. "I am the guardian. I am the traitor and the damned. I am redemption. I am the girl's last chance for salvation."
"I see," Chagan murmured. "So this is where you've been hiding."
"What are you talking about?" Rin demanded. "Who is she?"
But Chagan spoke past her, directly to the woman.
"You should have been immured in the Chulu Kurik."
"The Chulu Kurik can't hold me," hissed the woman. "I am a Spearly. My ashes are free."
She reached out and stroked Rin's damaged cheek like a mother caressing her child.
You don't want me gone. You need me.
Rin shuddered at her touch. I need my god. I need power. And I need fire.
If you call it now, you will bring down hell on earth, the woman warned.
Curdaline is hell on earth, said Rin.
She saw Najah screaming in the fog, and her voice wavered.
You don't know what true suffering is, the woman insisted angrily.
Rin curled her fingers into fists at her sides, suddenly pissed off.
True suffering? She had seen her friends stabbed with halberds, shot full of arrows, cut down with swords, burned to death in poisonous fog.
She had seen Synegard go up in flames.
She had seen Curdaline occupied by Federation invaders almost overnight.
I have seen more than my fair share of suffering, she hissed.
I'm trying to save you, little one. Why can't you see that?
What about Alten? Rin challenged.
Why haven't you ever tried to stop him?
The woman tilted her head.
Is that what this is about? Are you jealous of what he can do?
Rin opened her mouth, but nothing came out.
No.
Yes.
Did it matter?
If she had been as strong as Alten, he wouldn't have been able to restrain her.
If she were as strong as Alten, she could have saved Najah.
That boy is beyond redemption, said the woman.
That boy is broken like the rest.
But you are still pure. You can still be saved.
I don't want to be saved,
Rin shrieked.
I want power. I want Alten's power. I want to be the most powerful shaman there ever was, so that there is no one I can't save.
That power can burn down the world, the woman said sadly. That power will destroy everything you've ever loved. You will defeat your enemy, and the victory will turn to ashes in your mouth.
Chagan had finally regained his composure. You have no right to remain here, he said.
His voice trembled slightly as he spoke, but he raised one thin hand toward the woman in a banishing gesture.
You belong to the realm of the dead. Return to the dead.
Do not try, sneered the woman.
You cannot banish me. In my time I have bested shamans far more powerful than you.
There are no shamans more powerful than me, said Chagan, and he began to chant in his own language. The harshly guttural language Jiang had once spoken, the language Rin recognized now as the speech of the Hinterlands. His eyes glowed golden. The woman started to shake, as if standing over an earthquake, and then suddenly she burst into flames. The fire lit her face from within, like a glowing coal, like an ember about to explode. She shattered. Chagan took Rin's wrist and tugged. She became immaterial again, rushing headlong into the space where things were not real. She did not choose where they went. She could only concentrate on staying whole, staying herself, until Chagan stopped and she could regain her bearings without losing herself entirely. This was not the Pantheon. She glanced around, confused. They were in a dimly lit room the size of Alten's office, with a low, curved ceiling that forced them to crouch where they stood. Everywhere she looked, small tiles had been arranged in mosaics, depicting scenes she did not recognize or understand. A fisherman bearing a net full of armored warriors. A young boy encircled by a dragon. A woman with long hair weeping over a broken sword and two bodies. In the room's center stood a great hexagonal altar, engraved with 64 intricate characters of old Nikata calligraphy.
Where are we? Rin asked.
A safe place of my choosing, Chagan said. He looked visibly rattled. She was much stronger than I expected. I took us to the first place I thought of. This is a divinatory.
Here we can ask questions about your woman. Come to the altar.
She looked